so interesting as the previous lecture, because I'm not talking about any philosophical questions. This is just about precise mathematical formulation, which is, in my understanding, is an essential part of the foundations of quantum mechanics. So I'm just using standard formulation. And what I'm doing is to apply it to homodyne detection, which is a certain specific measurement scheme in quantum optics, and it is very well known and things like that. This moment problem is a technical tool which is needed in this description. I will begin by introducing the problem. So first of all, I should probably mention what the homodyne detection tries to, what is the point in that measurement, and it is the measurement of this is the annihilation operator of a single mode electromagnetic field, and one wants to measure these operators. Theta is a phase angle. One wants to measure these operators. The reason why one wants to do this is that by measuring all these for all different angles, one can reconstruct the state of the light beam, which is of interest. And homodyne detection is a way to do this. And the point in my talk is that the existing literature in quantum optics does not very clearly, in mathematical way, very clearly explain why this measurement scheme leads to measurement of this quantity, because it is an indirect measurement. One cannot directly measure these operators. So the introduction is that I first describe the measurement scheme for those who don't know it, and then I will describe the mathematical formalism which I'm going to use. These concepts are related to that formalism. I will explain them in a suitable place. And this is limit of strong auxiliary field is the circumstance in which this operator is supposed to get measured. Then, if there is still time, which I will explain also a bit more complex measurement, which is the measurement of the Q function by 8-port homodyne detector. But this can be left out if the time runs out. So the first, this is the balanced homodyne detection measurement. I believe it was first introduced by Yuen and Chan in 1980 something. And as I mentioned, it is used in quantum state reconstruction, quantum tomography. And I will draw a small picture here. So the idea is that we have a beam splitter. It's a 50-50 beam splitter, which means that when I should have drawn first this one, here comes the light beam, and part of it gets reflected and part of it goes through. And when you put another light beam coming from here, they mix together in a certain way, which is described by a unitary operator U. And the idea is that once these beams are mixed, you detect there is the two. These are photon detectors, which count the photons on each beam. And this is the signal beam which we are interested in. These operators are the annihilation operator associated with this signal beam. And here is the auxiliary beam. And here we have annihilation operators A and A star, and here is B and B star annihilation and creation operators associated with this beam. And now the idea is that here is the, this is in some quantum state T, and this one is held in the fixed coherent state. Coherent state. And these are combined, and then you detect the photons. Here you get the number N2. I don't know how it is done in practice, but the idea is that you can, for any given time, you can count the number of photons in each beam. And then you are interested in the difference N2 minus N1 of these photons. And then you also have to normalize it with the amplitude of the coherent state. This is coherent state. This is supposed to describe the laser beam. So that when I write this parameter z in a polar, this is a complex number z. When I write it in a polar representation, then this is the amplitude. Amplitude of the field, and this quantity is scaled by the amplitude. And now the idea is that okay, and of course this theta here is the phase of the complex number. Affects the result in such a way that in the limit of large amplitude, these numbers actually, when you measure these numbers, you're actually measuring this operator in which is, you're actually measuring this operator with respect to this initial state. And this is the sort of not very clearly formulated, that how do these numbers give me the measurement of this observable. And the purpose of this presentation is to make this clear. Here is the same things that I described already. So now, of course, we have to use quantum mechanics on this detector. So N2, counting the photons means that we are measuring the photon number operator N2, which can be written with respect to in terms of these annihilation operators like that. And here N1 can be written like that. This is just a harmonic oscillator, basically. And so measuring this number amounts to measuring the detecting the operator N2 minus N1, which is B star B minus A star A. And this is then divided by the amplitude Z, and there is the what?
These and H are not the same as these ones, right? Because they're mixed on the mean square.
Yeah, they are the operators before them.
But this N2 is some combination of this B and this A, right?
No, we're measuring this operator. We're measuring the operator, which is like this, with respect to the initial operator. This can be written then by using the unitary interaction.
Your A and B represent the spatial mode? Is that A and B represent the spatial mode going this way and that way?
Yeah, these are just, if you write the Hilbert space of this signal mode, it can be written as a linear combination of certain number states, like that. This is the basis of the Hilbert space, and this A is just A star N. Means that you go up with the basis, and A means that you go down. You go down.
I think maybe there's a confusion between a Heisenberg picture representation and a Schrodinger representation.
Yeah.
Looks like you're working in kind of Schrodinger picture and question.
Yeah,
and I was confused, so I was thinking in the Heisenberg.
Yeah, of course, when I write it in this way, then this moves it into the Heisenberg picture, because I can transform the I'm measuring this, but I can transform it now by using the operator U. I can transform it. Okay, I can. This is DZ. And transform it, and now it is sort of Heisenberg representation, and then it gives this straightforward calculation, which is very simple, and it gives how much time have you used?
Just under half an hour.
So this is, of course, this is very well known thing. I just want to show it. Yeah. So it gives this kind of operator. I will denote this by this part is denoted by A. So this. Just for future reference. And now the heuristic or intuitive argument goes that when the amplitude of the coherent state is very strong, then we can just replace B by the sort of classical field. And when you plug it in, it just seems to give this operator. And this is I was a couple of years ago, I was in some quantum optics conference, I asked one of them how he would explain this operator. I mean, he gave me this explanation, and of course, this is not very mathematical, and indeed, there exist better formulations. For example, you can start calculating characteristic functions of these probability measures. But usually, what they do when they get such a function, they expand in a Taylor series, and then they take a couple of first terms, and that's an approximation and not a proper limit. What I would like to have is that. If I have a probability that this number here, which is obtained in the measurement, probability that it finds itself in a set X, which is a subset of the real line, this depends on Z, and of course it depends on the state T of the signal field with respect to which this is measured. These are the probabilities which I obtain from the measurement, and I would like to see that when Z goes to infinity, this probability actually goes to the corresponding probability which is given by this operator, and this is very hard to find in any literature of quantum optics. So here are the notations. H is a complex Hilbert space, which is separable, of course, because it has this basis representation. No, it has this basis, and I denote by LH the set of bounded operators on H. And the overline bar is the closure, which has to be put, for example, here in order to get the self-adjoint operator. This operator, which is defined by definition on the maximal domain of the annihilation operator, is not self-adjoint in that domain. So we have to put bar in over the operator. BR is the Borel sigma algebra. And now I use the term observable to denote positive operator valued measure. This is sometimes denoted by like this POVM. This used to describe a measurement. For example, I just want to, if somebody is not familiar with this measure theoretic notation, I just want to say that if you have a discrete set of outcomes, for example, n outcomes, then and you measure this in some measurement setup, and then you have for each a g, you have a specific operator e g, which is a POVM element corresponding to this outcome. And the idea is that the probability that the measurement gives the result AG is obtained this way when T is the state of the system. This is what they use in quantum optics in some, at least I've seen in some books, this formulation. This is just the general formulation where we don't have a discrete set of outcomes. Then we have to use the measure theoretic formulation, and then we have just this kind of map which map Borel sets into the set of bounded operators, and this number, as I've written here, is the probability that when the system is in the state T, the measurement leads to the value which is in the set X. And for any self-adjoint operator, we get a standard projective measurement which corresponds to the case where these are projections. Generally, they only need to satisfy this condition. Here is the definition of this this thing. So it's just a measure sigma additive with respect to weak operator topology, and it each of its elements is positive. Now, and here is the definition of the moment operator which I'm going to use. So it just means that when I have a measure, I can integrate these functions with respect to the measure by using the complex measure which are obtained by sandwiching this POVM element by using two vectors. This has this domain. So now I'm at least ready to go into the actual formulation. How much time do I have? Okay. So this is the detection observable, this operator. It means that the detection statistics are given by this trace formula. It's just the application of the form which was here. So now I have a spectral measure, and in place of T, I have the state which has emerged from the beam splitter. So the state which emerges from the beam splitter this is the initial state, and this is the state emerging from the beam splitter. So these numbers give the probabilities. This number is the probability that the outcome of the measurement, which is this one, will lie in the set X. And now, since this is in a two mode, this operator, it is in a two mode field. So I have to interpret in terms of this signal field in order to get POVM on the signal field which we are interested in. So I have to write it in this form, and it turns out that it is like this, where A is this operator. So it has a very simple form. And now I would like to ask you that what happens when we take the limit of the large amplitude, what happens to these operators. And there was an existing result. The only problem was that the argument leading to this result was not very convincing. But the result itself is correct. It says that actually what I wrote here somewhere, that this is actually correct when I assume, when I take this slight technical condition on the set, that its boundary is of zero Lebesgue measure. So for example, all the intervals, this holds. But I want to prove this by using the moment operators. And this can easily be calculated by using the formula for the EZ, which was the observable mentioned, I got from the this one. So using this, it is easy to calculate, or should I say determine, the moment operators. The general form is like that, and then the first two are easily obtained of course, these have been formally calculated a long time ago, so it's not, no. The actual content of this is the correct domain consideration. These are unbounded operators. So, first two are like that, and the general form is this one. So there are two terms. The first term is the corresponding moment of this operator. Which we are interested in. And then there is this additional term, which, because it happens to be such that when I take a sandwich, it is bounded function of Z. So it goes to zero. And we have this limit. So each moment operator, in the level of moment operators, this convergence takes place. Now I want to show that it also takes place in the form of the PoEM elements. So to do that, I have sort of extracted the essential mathematical structure of this problem out of the context of this specific measurement. I formulated this general result, which is that if I take any sequence of PoEMs, and then subspace such that, first of all, the subspace is contained on the domain of each moment operator, and in addition, that the moments converge in this weak sense, then it follows that there actually exists a limiting POM. Such that these numbers go inside the numerical moments of that particular observable. And moreover, if I in addition assume that these positive measures are determinant, it means that I have a measure mu this positive measure, it is determinant in the case that if I take any other measure nu such that it has the same moments for each k, then it follows that it's the same measure. So the moments of the measure determine the measure. If this is the case, then E is the only POM which has this property here, and this is not trivial, this last one. It says that actually under these conditions the POM elements themselves converge in the weak operator topology, given that the set satisfies this technical condition that the boundary of the set is just what it claims to be. So it's the boundary. If we have a sort of nice set, the boundary is like this, and it is of course of zero Lebesgue measure. This is of course we have sets in the line, so boundaries. Basically, if we have an interval, the boundary consists of just two points. But in general, if the set is not interval, then the boundary can be more complex. For example, it can be more complex. In the general case, the boundary is defined such that it is the intersection of the closures of the set X and its complement. So now I can apply this to the specific case, because first of all, okay, so I apply it in such a way that I first fix this angle, which is in here, the phase of the coherent state. I first fix it, and then I discretize the sort of increase the amplitude in the I take a sequence which grows to infinity, so discretize the strong amplitude limit, and then I take this subspace. It's just the linear span of coherent states, and then according to the previous result, this holds. It's the same which I showed previously. So the moments converge in this weak sense, and of course also I can prove this. It's easy to show. This determinacy condition which was required in the theorem, and so I can apply this result, which was in the previous slide, to obtain that first of all the moments are enough to completely determine the limiting observable. That was the first thing in the theorem, and the second thing is that these POM elements converge to the to the corresponding elements of the spectral measure of this quadrature operator, and when we think what does it mean? It means that if I calculate if I have a measurement statistics which consists of these numbers and the probabilities which I obtain from the measurement, if I calculate the moments. For example, the first moment is the average of these values. If I calculate the moments and take sort of do this in each stage of this limit discretization, then I notice that I can determine the limiting quadrature observable by using only these limits, and then this is the sort of more operational, and it is just this. So the probability, if I calculate the probability that these numbers which I obtain from the measurement, that they end up in the set X when a system is in a state T, and then I increase. Now I should. Increase n here, then this gives the probability that this that the value of this observable is in the state is in the set X as long as X is such that its boundary has now I have shifted to Lebesgue measure because the quadrature spectral measure is absolutely continuous with the Lebesgue measure, so it's very simple, and this is exact actually, for example, if I take X just to be an interval AB, then there is no problem with this because the boundary is just two points A and B. So this is automatically of zero Lebesgue measure. So this holds, for example. Okay, this is already over. So this was the actual result. So we actually every probability converges indeed to this probability what we originally wanted. Now there is this 8-port detection, but I don't have time to explain it. So I think I'll skip to the summary, which I more or less explained already, except this last thing. So that's it, basically.
So when you take the difference between those two numbers, N1 and N2, you're throwing away some information which is available. Is it clear that information wouldn't allow a more efficient way of measuring this observable? Is it clear that information is essentially useless?
I don't know anything about why they use this. I suppose there is some reason why you can measure this in a more efficient way. I just take sort of this setup and try to analyze it. I'm not an expert in quantum optics, so I cannot say why this is what they use. Perhaps there are other things, but maybe someone else can answer why this homology detection is.
Okay, I mean, I know this is the usual setup. I just wondered if one could show that it actually was the best setup.
Oh, no. Maybe, yeah, but I just want to sort of do this three times.
Okay. Then one other question. You mentioned that you would need some timing to this experiment. There would be some timing gate. You would only detect photons during. Your analysis is single mode, so presumably you don't address that. Have you thought about that?
No, I don't thought very much about how you actually get a number from this detector. It's a probably difficult question. I don't know how it is, but this is what they more or less think. They think they are measuring this. Is observable. Of course, if you want to be more sort of realistic, you take some imperfectness in the detectors, and so you're not actually measuring a sharp number operator, but something else. But this is not what I consider here. But I don't.
Do you have a question?
Yes. So if I understand it correctly, the convergence is weak. So it means that it depends on the state, on the input state, P.
Yes.
So what are the, let us say, the states for which it converges the fastest, let us say?
I have no idea. This just says that it converges. It does not tell anything about the rate of the convergence.
I had a related question. So in some of the inputs to the theorem, it must implicitly put conditions on the state P. I mean, so can you say sort of what class of states, in some physical way, what class of states the theorem works for? Like, does it suffice that the expected energy be finite, or is there some other thing of that sort you could say?
This works for all states.
Any state whatsoever. Even if the sort of expectation value of n were to be infinite?
No, there is no restriction. Probability converges always. It's just the only restriction is on the set itself. The moment operators has to be, if we want to define the moment operators, then you have to place restrictions on the state if we want to do the conversion. It was here. This convergence, this is of course, it places restrictions on the state, because you cannot even calculate the moment operators in all states. They have to be in the domain of the state. But this convergence. This convergence here, it's not I've stated here that it is in the weak operator topology, but it can be shown that it actually gives this one. So it implies this also for any state t.
Well, I'm a little confused. Maybe we can try. I thought you would use those moment results in the proof of the theorem.
I use them, but I have not written the proof.
No, I know, but I mean, then there must be implicit conditions that the state be in the domain of some of these operations.
Yeah, but when you have used the the proof is sort of carried out by using coherent states only, but then. Okay, maybe we have discussed it. It follows that from this last convergence that that the probability converges always. Even when you cannot calculate the moment of operators.
Well, thank you very much. Let's thank our speaker again.